head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Ross. Today I'm with Matt Jones, Kevin Harnett, Pat 40. I'm with the new Chariot, Kristen Wall, United States Congressman John Yarman, Sarah Bohanter, and
welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am Podcast Network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So here's Rick.
This is the Rusty Satellite Show, home of the most interesting people in the Ville. I am your host, Rick Redding, doing this for the 195th consecutive week. That's covering almost 4 years of time and some 350 or so. I guess I should count up how many guests have been on this show. But this week, I have some really good ones. I tell you, I don't always plan well for this show, and sometimes things come together at the last minute. That was certainly the case this week, but all came out well. Let me tell you about my second guest first. In the second part of the show, you're going to hear from the director of libraries here in Louisville, because upcoming, his name is Jim Blanton. He's a really sharp guy. He's been there about a year and a half, and the libraries are a big, important part of our community, and I'm glad to be able to bring you some new information about the libraries. But primarily, the timing is because Gonzo Fest is coming up in a couple of weeks, and that is an annual celebration of all things Hunter S. Thompson. And as you know, if you listen to the show, I was in Colorado, in Aspen, at the Woody Creek Tavern, Hunter Thompson's favorite haunt or hangout when he was alive and living in Colorado. And this Gonzo Fest is really taking on some new life this year. I think it's all going to take place for the first time at the Louisville Library, where, if you did not know, Hunter S. Thompson grew up I think on Ransdell, right in town, and his mother worked at the main branch of the library, so that's pretty cool. And there's going to be a lot of great, there's going to be a couple films shown, and I'll let Jim tell you all about it. So that's coming up in the second half of the show. We'll hear about the new libraries in town and some other things that are going on with that. So I really was happy that at the last minute I was able to get on Jim Blanton's schedule and talk to him for the Rusty Satellite Show. But first up, I'm going to have a really interesting guy who is known. He's got one of the coolest nicknames, I guess, or the most appropriate nicknames for his profession. He's called the Sod Father, and his name is Tom Nielsen. He is the head groundskeeper at Slugger Field, and he has a really interesting background. He's one of the best in the business, best in the country. He has a bunch of awards. I for the first time, I thought I'd been in every part of Slugger Field, but today I went into his spot, which is out in center field, out beyond center field, and there is a whole bunch of equipment out there. Those guys work really hard. I think he's got like some 40 people that work for him. And Tom is like the Rick Pitino of college basketball. A lot of the people that have worked for him, started out as on his staff, are now head groundskeepers in other cities, in both minor leagues and major leagues. And so I learned a lot about the Sports Turf Managers Association, I think it's called, and Tom is just won one of that organization's biggest awards, and is gearing up for what is going to be a very busy year of activity at Louisville Slugger Field. Not only do you have the Louisville Bats baseball team, which opened their season on Friday, actually it's an exhibition with the Cincinnati Reds on Friday, but the soccer team, Louisville City FC, I went to their opener last weekend with my good buddy Jason Smith, and they are off and running. That requires a whole different field preparation setup. And of course, this year, for the first time, the ACC tournament, the Louisville Cardinals are going to play not at their home field at Patterson Stadium, but the ACC tournament is going to be played at Slugger Field this year, and that's going to be a big event for the city as well. Actually, that is coming here because of those silly legislators in North Carolina with their goofball bathroom bill. The NCAA took a lot of its events away from North Carolina, and fortunately, no such bathroom bill is coming to Kentucky. But I've got some other things going on in Kentucky that are also unpleasant that I'll bring up in the middle part of the show. But before we get to Tom Nielsen, I want to tell you about what makes this show possible, and I'm very grateful to my sponsors, Passport Health Plans and the Eye Care Institute, and also a new sponsor, More Smiles, my own dentist, who's been taking care of me and my family for probably 10 or 12 years. I don't know. But the Eye Care Institute, I want to mention, is down in Butchertown on Story Avenue. They're your one-stop shop for anything related to eye care. Whether you have routine vision issues or need a significant correction such as LASIK, Eye Care Institute is where you want to visit. You can call them at 502-589-1500. Their friendly staff will make an appointment for you and get you in there right away. All right, so let's get on with the show. This is coming up is my interview with Tom Nielsen. It took place at Slugger Field on Wednesday morning.
I had no use for health insurance, but my mom was always saying, sign up for Passport. And I was like, Mom. She was like, for my peace of mind. It got to be where I needed peace of mind, so I did. Now my mom, she can chill. And I feel pretty good about it, too.
Together, we can all feel better. Call 1-800-578-0603 and ask for Passport. That's 1-800-578-0603. Passport Health Plan, working together for a healthier Kentucky.
And today, I'm in the bowels of Slugger Field with a guy who's known as the Sod Father, Tom Nielsen.
I've got a couple different names I've been called, and that's one. But thank you. Another one, I guess in the last 5 years, they've started to call me the Job Father because I've put so many people out in
the
business.
You're like the Rick Pitino of grounds crews, right?
Yes. I've actually been called that also. Hopefully, that's about the only comparison of Rick Pitino.
Well, there you go. Well, you have been... here at Slugger Field since it opened.
Yeah, I was here on the ground floor when it was being constructed, so I know every inch of this place, the field. I know, you know, what's underneath, the irrigation, all the drainage and everything. I was here while it was being built. So,
well, I want to ask you a little bit about the field stuff, but first, your background. You came from Wisconsin, right? And got a degree
in horticulture. I worked with the Milwaukee Brewers. I was in Milwaukee for 4 years. And I spent a couple years down in spring training with two different teams, the Florida Marlins and the Kansas City Royals, just for spring training. And then after that, I went to Eugene, Oregon, and I was the head groundskeeper for the Eugene Emeralds, and I was there for 3 years. And then I moved from Eugene to Chattanooga and became the head groundskeeper for the Chattanooga Lookouts. And I was there for a year, and then I came up here, and I've been here ever since. So I've got, this is starting my 26th season in sports turf.
Okay, and for that, I understand, the Sports Turf Managers Association, right, just gave you a prestigious award.
Yeah, there's three awards that I can get, like the top awards in my field. They're the Founders Awards, they're called, and I was just given... it's called the Dick Erickson Award.
Uh-huh.
It's one of the founders of the Sports Turf Managers Association, that which I belong in. And most of the people that are in sports turf throughout the country, university, you know, professional baseball, football, all the parks and rec, a lot of the people are involved in the Sports Turf Managers Association. It's a big fraternity, and that's how we network and learn. And I was... given this award by my peers, and it's pretty special. I'm was completely surprised by it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a great honor to be recognized in your profession. Now, I know you got some special challenges out here, especially. I wanted to ask you specifically about with the soccer team coming in the last few years. I actually went to the soccer game the other night. And
it's a lot of fun.
It is. It is in the daytime, but that's tough on the turf, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough on the turf. It's tough on the us groundskeepers. You know, it's a lot more stress, a lot more hours. You know, a few things that have definitely changed because of it is the amount of people that we have on the grounds crew, and the amount of people, the more people we have, we don't have to work quite as many hours. We're able to spread it out, because in the past we would work, you know, from 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning on a game day for baseball and get home at midnight. Well, when they would go on the road in the past, we didn't have many events on those roads, but now we have soccer, and it takes usually about four total days to have a soccer game. It takes a day to set up the artificial turf that we cover up the clay. It takes a day to, we lower the mound. The mound is retractable, which was one of just a couple in the world.
Yeah.
Because the players.
Yeah, they take the whole mound.
Goes
and
down.
Lower it. Like
and then
an
we
elevator.
Put a couple different foam plugs and cover it up with synthetic turf.
Wow.
So the whole process of painting the field, lowering the mound, putting the synthetic turf on, that's a couple day process. And then the game takes another day, and then a whole nother day to get the field back ready for baseball.
Okay.
So,
okay.
You know, just one soccer game is really, you know, about four events.
Wow.
So if they're on the road for 8 days, four of those days are taken up specifically for soccer. So our free time and our downtime is a lot less than it was in the past.
Now, Tom, I don't want to be critical or anything, but I was sitting on the first base line in the second row, and I looked out on the field, and there's like little spots of dirt there with the grass. So
I don't know. We try not to have any of that, but it's hard when you do have soccer and you play on a field that is cool season and warm season.
Right.
So right now, the warm season grass isn't really growing.
Sure.
And so there might be some different colors out there because there's some dormant Bermuda,
sure,
and it's covered up with cool season grass, which is usually green now.
Yeah.
But we've had a cold snap. So if there is some imperfections, which most people don't notice unless you walk out there, you have to really know what you're looking for. I'm very critical of what the field looks like, and a lot of people like to tease, like, oh, I see a weed out there. They're just kidding, because it does.
There's no weeds out there,
for
right?
For most of the time, it looks pretty good.
Yeah.
And the best compliment I've ever gotten is that grass real? You know, it looks artificial at some times. You know?
It really is. And it just so we know, it is real grass, because I know, you know, I don't know your industry as well, but, like, you know, U of L's publicized the fact they have this special turf that's, it's not real grass, or is it real grass?
No, it's not. It's the synthetics that they use now do look more like real grass. They play more like real grass. I think they're safer for the players. But I mean, the baseball field at U of L is, they're the only thing that is natural is, I think, the pitcher's mound. And that's
base,
natural clay. But everything else, the warning track, the home plate, the outfield, the infield, is all synthetic.
So it's never considered doing something like that here at Slugger?
Oh, no. That's, I would never want that. Because, I mean,
that seems like it put groundskeepers out of
business. Well, there's still a lot of maintenance to do on that. But I think we hope that we never, ever go to that point. You know, we do have a lot of events, and we have to have a lot of events to maintain this beautiful facility that we have. So
that's
just the way things are going nowadays. We're putting more events on, so the groundskeepers have to be better. They have to be smarter. We have to have more knowledge on how to keep this grass healthy so we can play the amount of events that need to be played to maintain a facility.
Yeah, because you don't want brown spots.
So
like
it's
my little league field had brown spots and all the places where grass is.
A lot of people in the past have always thought, you know, like Caddyshack, it's a Bill Murray type person.
Yeah,
it's not the case. The people that are being groundskeepers have to be, I mean, very well rounded in their knowledge. It's not just maintaining your home lawn where no one walks on it other than once a week, and it's mowed at 3 inches. We actually will mow our grass all the way down to a half an inch, and there's people on it every day in high traffic. So that grass has to be healthy and be able to recover from that traffic, and it takes a lot to go into it.
Well, you've got all that knowledge. I can imagine that maybe Gary Ulmer or Greg Gallietta will come down here and ask you a question about their lawn. Do you get that a lot?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not, you know, from them, you know, they don't bother me too much, but I do have a lot of people, you know, around the neighborhood that will ask, and they find out who I am, and I will try to help them as much as I can. But a lot of times they don't want to spend the money on what it takes to really have a healthy lawn, and they don't want to put the water to it because water is very expensive.
Yeah.
So if you can't do that, having a really good lawn all year long is difficult.
Yeah.
you know. Yeah.
And you're not coming over and cutting anybody's grass for them.
No. No, my wife won't allow me to do that. I get most of my free time is taken up by my family, and we like to go camping. So I don't do a lot of...
You got a nice lawn at home?
Yeah, it's actually... I just renovated it because I wasn't happy with it at the end of the year. And okay. I'm getting it back. But yeah, usually it's pretty good. I've got... in-ground irrigation, so I'm able to water what I need. And
I can imagine your neighbors are intimidated.
Well, yeah, and both of my neighbors don't seem to be too concerned about their yard, so it makes mine look even better.
Well, that's funny. Now, we want to getting back to events. And now, I know the ACC tournament is coming up for the first time ever in Louisville.
Very, very excited about that. I think that's a great thing for Louisville. It's a great thing for, Slugger Field. I think it's quite a challenge. We're looking forward to taking on that challenge.
So they play a lot of games,
16
right?
games in, I think, 6 days.
Wow.
So we're talking, at least 2 or 3 games, every day. And that's a lot of wear sandwiched in between baseball homestands. Okay. And then, soon after a homestand, we have a soccer game. So there's no rest for the field. Yeah. So it's definitely going to put a little bit more challenge for the grounds crew, but I think we're up to it, and it's going to be exciting.
Well, I wanted to ask, you're in charge of the grounds crew, and I go to games, and I see a lot of times these guys sometimes get into like the entertainment aspect of between innings.
Oh yeah, the baseball game is probably secondary. It's all the in between neat promotions that they have, giveaways. I mean, it's a great place to come and spend an evening, about as cheap as you can get to really have a good time. So they're not, when they're in between innings, they're trying to, keep this excitement up. Okay. People are coming down here not necessarily for just the game. It's the atmosphere of being down at Slugger Field. It's all the cool things they have going on in between innings and the different acts that they have. It's very exciting.
Coach your crew on appealing to the crowd?
We try not to do
or tell
too
them to
many
get the stuff right.
We try to look professional and act professional when we're out there. We're on stage, before the game and during fifth inning and post game. We're on. That's our time to perform, and so we try to really, look professional and act professional. We don't do a lot of extra, dancing or anything like that. We try to keep it strictly turf related.
Okay,
and a lot of people do. Come early to watch what we do, and even stay late to watch what we do.
Okay,
and it's
well, this is a big week coming up. I know the Reds are coming in, right?
Yep. And the Reds are playing on Friday, and I think the weather's going to cooperate. It's going to be exciting. It's always nice to have the major league club come down here and get to have
they
the fans
check out
see
the
them
field too, right?
Oh yeah, and that's for me, that's we want them to be playing on a surface that is just as good as their major league field up in Cincinnati. So it's a little extra pressure, but we like that. We want to show them that we're just as good as they are, mm-hmm. Up there, and we have soccer.
Yeah. Well, always you hear about players and groundskeepers, collaborating or tilting the foul lines and stuff. How much interaction do you have with the players?
Well, we do communicate a lot with the managers and the coaching staff. We want the players to come to us if they do have an issue, and we do what we can. There's certain things we can't do because of the type of grass we have or the time of the year. Or what they're asking is just not, they don't understand. As much as you think they would completely know how turf is taken care of, how the clay is taken care of, they just play on it. They really have no idea what we do. So, as long as we go and explain to them, and a lot of times if they come to us and they want something done, if we're not able to do it, we might tell them we still did it because in their mind they think it's better. And usually 99% of the time they go, wow, it's playing a lot better.
So
and
you trick them.
We don't, yeah. We just, we let them think we maybe done something, but we only, we only can do certain things to the field that, and sometimes they're, you know, what they want is not an actual viable viable thing.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to the season, and you know, please don't take offense for the little spot I saw on the soccer field. I'm sure the field's going to be in great shape.
That spot was called the pitching mound. It was it wasn't real grass, so I'll take blame for that.
All right, Tom Nielsen, the sod father. Thanks for being on the Rusty Satellite Show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Steve Coombs, and each week Rick Redding and I record a new episode of Eat, Drink, Talk. We'll fill you up and fill you in on what's happening in Louisville's thriving drinking and dining scene. We bring you food news, interviews, and our take on what's happening around town. Find us on iTunes and download Eat, Drink, Talk.
And yes, I really did enjoy going out to Slugger Field and talking to Tom Nielsen. He's quite a character, and as you'll see on the website, we took a picture out in center field, and it's really interesting. I really found it interesting. Actually, I took my son Luke to the interview because, and I'm very happy to let you know about this, Luke completed the requirements for a high school diploma for Jefferson County Public Schools today, on Wednesday. And so I'm very proud of him, and he went along with me on that interview, and we stopped later at High Five Donuts and had a nice couple of donuts there. Saw last week's guest, Dr. Lyle Sussman, happened to be in the place talking to his daughter, Annie. And so it was all good. It was a wonderful experience, and I'm so proud of Luke. He had some setbacks in his junior year at Eastern High School, but came back and opted to finish up online and has done so. So he is a high school graduate. That makes 3 for 3 in the Redding family. I've talked a lot about my other sons on this show, Josh, who is working for Google in Colorado, and my son Nick, now known as Nike. He is living in Italy and is learning theater. So, very proud of the Redding family. It's a big week when Luke earns his diploma from JCPS. So, it's a great program over there, by the way. If you didn't know, there are options if you don't want to just go to one of the JCPS schools. All right, so let's get on with the show. And now I've got a story that is like the worst story of the week, the worst thing that happened. As you know, basketball fans, UK, I was making jokes about this. Paula was making fun of me because I was discounting UK because I really didn't want them to win that much. But they lost finally to North Carolina on Sunday. And, you know, it was a tight game. It was, you know, sloppy at times. But basically, Cats played. They lost. They had a 5-point lead with a couple of minutes left, and they blew it, and they lost. Okay? And that's the end of the season. That's what happens in the NCAA tournament. Only one team at the end remains undefeated. But what I'm talking about today, I'm reading this story in the Courier Journal and hearing about this on radio, that UK fans, they're such bad sports. They're such sore losers. They are the official that was involved in their game on Sunday, because people who are not good with sportsmanship and like to whine about losing, they usually, a lot of times, they blame the officials when they lose. And that's what all the UK, all the people in Big Blue Nation now are blaming the officials for their loss, but they've taken it a step further. They found out where this official John Higgins lives and found out what business he runs, and they're sabotaging the business. He even received a death threat from a UK fan, supposedly. It was reported in the newspaper, so it must be true. And that's despicable behavior. That's why I have a hard time pulling for UK. The kids are great, and I even like Coach Calipari. But the fans and the way they do, threatening an official, really? And that official apparently did well enough that he's been rewarded by the NCAA. He's going to be at the Final Four, so he's not really a bad official. I watched the game. I thought there were some questionable calls that went both ways. So UK fans that are whining about officiating when you lose, you know, get over it is my advice. So there's my rant about that. I have one other disturbing political story I saw in the newspaper, that Governor Bevin, Governor Matt Bevin, is trying to make Kentucky the I don't know if it's the first place or not, but he's trying to outlaw the abortion totally, and the lone abortion provider in the state. There's already two others that have been shut down, and the one in Louisville is downtown, right there, I think, on Market Street. And Bevin is challenging them through legal procedures to try to outlaw try to put them out of business so that women in Kentucky will be among the first that can't get an abortion in their own state. And that's a sad state of affairs, if you ask me. My position on abortion is and has always been, if you don't like it, don't have one. But your attempts to control the lives of others are despicable, I think. So that's how I feel about that. But on to brighter notes, we have, as you know, I do a show called Eat, Drink, Talk and a website called eatdrinktalk.net. We've got a lot of really good news over there. Steve Coombs, my partner on that, was on Great Day Live this morning, just basically talking about some of the stories that we have written about on the website, eatdrinktalk.net. And our podcast this week featured, I was thrilled to go down to the Great Flood Brewing Company's new headquarters. You might be familiar with their tap room in the Highlands, but these are, and it's very interesting, these are three young guys in their 20s who got degrees from U of L and opted to go with the tried and true path. They got themselves jobs where they had to wear ties and all that, and basically they've chucked it all to run this beer company, and I think it's a great story. You can read about that on eatdrinktalk.net and listen to the podcast of Eat Drink Talk. And now Steve also has a great interview. He talks with Brett Davis, who is the guy behind the Red Herring, which is the new bar and restaurant that's going to be right next to the Silver Dollar in the old Hilltop Theater on Frankfort Avenue. I think it's a very interesting change to the landscape over there. It's amazing what that area has done. Now, the Hilltop Tavern right across the street is still closed because it originally closed about a month or so ago because of plumbing problems. And now they say they're closed for remodeling. So we'll see how that goes. Another thing that happened out in my neighborhood, out in Jeffersontown, it was kind of surprising to see. You know, we have a handful of restaurants near the downtown square, and one of them is Johnny V's. It's right there in the middle of the square, and it announced on Facebook that this week, Friday, would be its last hurrah. They're closing down. I was told that the family that runs it was just kind of had enough of it. You know, it's difficult to run a restaurant, and it's all-consuming sometimes. So the good news is the very successful bar sort of out their back door, the Rec Bar, rumor has it that the two guys who run the Rec Bar, Corey Sims and Tony Thomas, are going to take over the Johnny V spot on the square. They're going to call it Max Dough House, and that's going to be about, it might be 6 weeks, 8 weeks before it opens up, but they're going to try their hand at running a restaurant in addition to the Rec Bar in J-Town. So exciting news in J-Town, isn't it? I tell you, I am anxious to see. If you're familiar with J-Town, there is a quality exhaust building, sort of a garage on the corner of Watterson Trail and Taylorsville Road, and it is under contract, and the people in J-Town that are involved in the contract, I guess, are doing a great job of keeping a secret as to who the restaurateur is going in there. Now, I have heard from reliable sources that it is a restaurant with other locations in Louisville, but that's about it. That's about all you can get anybody to say about it. I think it will be an independent restaurant, maybe a small chain. My personal favorite hope, fingers crossed, is that it might be like the Drake's Group. That would be an ideal location for them out there. It's a very prominent spot in J-Town, and there's a lot going on out there. So anyway, a lot of changes going on in our city. I'm very happy to be a part of it and try to keep up with all of it. So there you go. That's all I got for the news, but I really want to get on to Jim Blanton, who is the library director for the city of Louisville. You know, maybe 10 years ago, there was some controversy with the library. You know, there was this library tax bill out, and it was, the plan was to build all these libraries with tax money. Well, you know, people don't vote to be taxed. That's one thing that the city should have known, but it didn't. The tax on the library was defeated soundly, and the library went back to the drawing board, and they figured out a way to build some of these buildings, these regional libraries, without a specific tax for the libraries. And I have been out to the one on Dixie Highway, the new regional library, and it is beautiful. It is great. And so, and I've passed by many times the one that's being built out in Okolona next to Jefferson Mall. I think it's I think Jim says in the interview it's gonna open very soon. But I'm really excited to hear that there's gonna be one in the Northeast, near the Northeast YMCA out there at Whips Mill Road. That's on the drawing board. So a lot of good things going on with the library, including the first time the Gonzo Fest is going to be housed at the library, and there's going to be more of a focus on the literary, although there's still going to be music and art involved, and a lot of tributes to the legacy of Hunter S. Thompson, the father of Gonzo journalism. And Jim is a native of Lexington and has worked most recently in Owensboro before he got this job here about a year and a half ago. And so I went by his office on Wednesday afternoon and sat down, and we had the following conversation.
Hey, I'm Dan Vonderhyde.
I'm Stephanie White.
We host a weekly podcast called
40-ish.
It's a show about life at middle age.
I'm not 40 yet.
Well, you're getting there eventually.
I guess.
So each week we talk about something that applies to the life of a middle-aged person. We drop a little bit of wisdom in every episode, and we go out and talk to people about their experiences.
And we laugh.
And we laugh a lot. Comes out every Tuesday. Make sure you download.
Tune in.
All right, today the Rusty Satellite Show is at the Louisville, Maine Public Library downtown. I'm with Jim Blanton, who has been here, a year and a half or so as the, executive director, head librarian?
Library director, yeah.
Library director, okay. I had your predecessor on the show a couple of years ago, but one of the main reasons I wanted to talk to you today is you're bringing Gonzo Fest to the library, and that's a big change in that festival that's sort of gotten well-known in the last few years.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Tell me how that happened and why.
Well,
why here?
It started out, I was approached by a group of folks, some of whom were involved in Gonzo Fest, and they were wanting to discuss with me an effort locally to produce a Hunter S. Thompson statue, which might be placed at the library. And so that was the first I'd really heard of any kind of movement locally around Hunter Thompson. I didn't know about Gonzo Fest at the time because I was still new to town, and that started me down a road of researching Hunter S. Thompson and discovering that not only was he from Louisville, but also that his mother worked here at the Maine Library as a librarian until she retired, and that he had spent plenty of time in the library as well, developing his love of reading and writing, etc. So that was really fascinating to me. I've always been fascinated by him, and that I deep dived and started reading everything, and getting to know those folks better, the Gonzo Fest team, and they expressed a desire to come to the library because they had always hoped for that festival to evolve into something that celebrated all aspects of Hunter Thompson.
Sure.
Music, obviously very important to him, is inspirational for him, but they've also had other programming elements there at the waterfront over the years, some panel discussions and so forth, which is challenging in that venue because you've got music on one hand and then a tent next to the music, and trying to have a conversation is very difficult. So it made sense from a practical standpoint to bring it here, but also, we're very well versed in programming here at the library, and Hunter's interests and orientation, everything really lends itself well to our mission because he was about First Amendment, freedom, speech, and so forth.
Right.
And obviously, literature is a huge component of his development. So to do
you don't want to say use of drugs and guns.
That's right. Well, and I tell people that, if you were to put under a microscope many of the authors that we celebrate and revere, you would find that, just like most artists, they have an interesting, personal life,
right,
that coincides with their other element that people tend to gravitate toward. Hunter just, I think, had the disadvantage of living in an era where media was available to document very well, his behavior and so forth. But really, what we're focusing on is not that, the wilder aspect of Hunter. It's really about the literature, the journalism,
sure,
and so forth. Yeah.
And I understand this is April 16th on a Sunday here at the library. There's going to be
April 15th.
April 15th.
Saturday.
And it's going to be outside for the music, and the programming parts are going to be inside. So
yes,
it sounds like a great, great event. Doesn't cost anything to get into.
It's free, and it's going to be a fantastic lineup. Like you said, the music will be outside, and then inside we're going to have several different things going on. We kick off with a film screening of Where the Buffalo Roam, the 1980 film with Bill Murray, where he portrayed Hunter S. Thompson. It's going to be introduced with a discussion by Dean Otto, who's the curator of film at the Speed Museum.
Okay.
And then we're going to have a couple of other panels that are taking place. One is on the state of political affairs. I believe it's called Politics Decadent Depraved, kind of referring to his Kentucky Derby, yeah. You know, piece. And we'll have a professor from U of L who will be hosting that. We also have a panel on the literary impact of Hunter S. Thompson taking place. Okay. And very excited because Juan Thompson, his son, is going to be here and participating in that panel. Uh-huh. And actually doing a book signing himself. He's written a book called Stories I Tell Myself, which is about growing up as the son of Hunter S. Thompson, which
must have been really wild.
Yeah.
Now, you were telling me that you've just sort of... you're from Lexington and have been delving into Hunter S. Thompson. Mm-hmm. I tell you, I just went out to Aspen, Colorado, went to the Woody Creek Tavern and saw a lot of Hunter S. Thompson memorabilia and talked to a lot of people out there. It must be pretty cool as the library director to be really in charge of putting this whole thing on.
Oh, it is. I mean, to have something like this, you know, it's really kind of land in your lap that your library was sort of a pivotal place in the development of a writer who's known from, you know, the world round, you know.
Right.
And I think it's exciting for, you know, Louisville to have someone, you know, sure. so well known as well. And
so just real quick, you mentioned a statue. You think that's ever going to happen?
You know, I'm not directly involved with the effort to put the statue together, but my understanding is that it's moving forward, and certainly, you know, we're open to discussing that when the time comes near. I mean, certainly, you know, he's important to the city, he's important to the library, so it makes all the sense in the world to have that discussion.
Well, very good. Well, I want to talk with you a little bit about the library. You've been in this position for a little while now, and I think what a lot of people are interested in are the new regional libraries that are built, as in Valley Station, under construction in Okolona, and there's an exciting new one you just told me about coming to the Northeast.
Yeah, I stepped in. I always say it's like the treadmill here was set at like 11, and I stepped on it. You know, it was already rolling when I got here, and it's so exciting to be a part of that. I started my first week on the job actually was the groundbreaking for South Central. Southwest, which you mentioned, that was opened in 2014. And for folks who haven't been there, I really recommend you go check it out. It's a modern, stunning building. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, I've been in it. It's really great.
And certainly what you're going to see with these next two regionals, more of that, you know, that kind of, you know, just fantastic, you know, architecture, but also we're building in new elements. We're evolving as we go, and mm-hmm. One of the things we're incorporating into South Central, which I'm particularly excited about, we have an artist in residence program that we're going to kick off with the opening of South Central over in Okolona, it's called the Collider, and it's a studio space where we will have an artist every month, a different from my podcasting, in fact, might be one of them.
Okay.
So art is
I volunteer.
That's right. Art is very, you know, is defined broadly. So the idea is that patrons can come in, interact informally with the artist who is there throughout the, you know, the opening hours of the library, X number of hours per week. And then there'll be structured programming also each month that the artist will engage in, you know, teaching formally. Okay. But really excited about that program. The application process is open right now. As we speak, it'll be wrapping up, I think, mid-April. And then when we kick off every month, you're going to go there and you're going to see a new artist. You can go in, like I said, informally interact and learn and create with them and then do and participate in formal programs. But South Central is going to be opening later this summer, so that's coming soon. And then we're currently in the design phase of the Northeast Regional Library over off Whips Mill Road near the Northeast YMCA. We're going to be in a park-like setting, which is going to be wonderful. And these libraries are all 40,000 square feet. They're just phenomenal facilities that allow us to not only have all the collections, which people are familiar with, but also these wonderful spaces like the Collider and meeting spaces mm-hmm. and all these kind of things that you expect of modern libraries.
And lots and lots of computers, right?
Oh, boy, oh, boy. In fact, one of the things I'm very excited about South Central in terms of technology, you know, most people are familiar coming to the library and seeing the setup of there's rows of computer stations, and that's great, and it serves its purpose, but we recognize that we're in a mobile era now. So South Central is going to be the first time we have a laptop checkout kiosk. So you can come in, swipe your library card, a laptop comes out,
wow.
and you go sit wherever you want in the building. You know, we have these wonderful new buildings, it doesn't make sense for us to tell you you have to sit at a row of tables, you know, in one particular spot. Why not go enjoy like the nice view over there in the reading room or something? So,
but you got to keep it in the building.
Yeah, keep in the building. Yeah, but but you can go anywhere you like.
Okay. Well, I was reading your background. I know you've been in libraries, I guess, your whole career. You went to UK and a couple other library stops along the way. Most recently in Owensboro. What is going on with libraries? I mean, I'm curious about the trends. When I come in, and I'm a regular library user, it does seem like people are, you know, are they checking out books less?
No. Well, what's happening is there's two things. One, you have what I call your bedrock services, and bedrock services are what you know from the traditional library, I believe, is that's things like checking out books, asking questions at the information desk, going to the children's section, maybe participating in a story time, things that you know you've experienced and we all know and love. I would say with checkouts in particular, it's just what's changed is it's a mixture now. We have electronic checkout, so you can check out ebooks or audiobooks, you know, electronically and so forth, as well as the traditional print, you know, hard copy. So it's kind of a mix. So you might see the print, you know, going down a little bit, but then the electronics going up. So it's kind of balancing out a bit. But then in addition to those bedrock services, you have what I see as the future of libraries, where libraries have been kind of a passive experience where people come in, they get something, and they leave. We're creating spaces where we want people to come in and connect with each other and learn together. And that's kind of speaks to these new regional libraries. I've been talking about the Collider and so forth. It's about curating community knowledge, bringing that knowledge into the building so that the patrons who come in can discover it and be inspired by it and actually create things on site. Like, you know, now we have a program called IndieLoo, and this very ties in very well for us because we're trying to support local authorship. So we have a mechanism now where people can submit, if they've written something, they can submit their works directly to our library catalog, and people can check it out online. We have programming themed around that to teach you how to write and to publish. Okay. And then we have the ability for people who are recognized through that other process of submitting their works to be able to come in and have a venue to talk about what they've done, kind of like an author meet and greet. So it's sort of taking what we've done traditionally and elevating it to the next level, and really what I call it, enhancing the community's investment in this resource. You know, not only it's great that we've been kind of a repository of knowledge, but now it's a more engaging experience. People coming in, it's active, it's participatory.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. It brings us back, like, I guess, to Gonzo Fest, because there's a literary contest, an art contest associated with that.
Yep.
You can go to GonzoFestLoo, I think, .com, or I'm sure it's all over the library.
It's on the website, lfpl.org.
There you go.
You can get all the information about the program, and that's a great example. The Gonzo Fest Literary Contest, when the winners are selected, they will, after they're awarded, you know, the recognition, their works will live online here at the library, and people can read them, and you know, in perpetuity. So,
all right. Well, it's great to hear all this great news about the library, Jim Blanton. Welcome to the city, and
thank you.
Thanks for being on the Rusty Satellite
Show. Great to be here. Thank you.
All right, and I'd like to wish a big thank you to Jim Blanton for squeezing me in over at the Louisville Public Library today, and also to Tom Nielsen, the great groundskeeper, the sod father over at Louisville Slugger Field, for being my guest on the Rusty Satellite Show, where we always have the most interesting people in the bill on the air to talk with you each and every week for, well, we're coming up on 200, and that's going to be a big deal. I'm planning a party. A lot of people have asked me about that, so I'm looking forward to that. I did want to tell you one more thing before I let you go. I rarely read Leo Weekly anymore, or any of the newspapers for that matter, but Leo Weekly's got its April Fool's issue, and it's really, really fake news. It's got an artist rendering of Donald Trump on the cover. There's a lot of really funny stuff inside if you appreciate satire and humor and those sorts of things. So a good fake news issue of Leo Weekly on newsstands now, and April 1st is coming up. next week. So beware, beware. Be ready for that. I want to thank my sponsors once again for making the show possible. My friends at More Smiles, my dentist for a long, long time, Dr. Sean Moore will take care of you. You can give them a call. And they are at the corner of Taylorsville and Stony Brook. My friends at the Eye Care Institute on Story Avenue, you can call them at 502-589-1500. They're your one-stop shop for anything related to eye care and eye vision correctness. And also to my good friends at Passport Health Plans, where I write a monthly column in Insider Louisville about a current health issue. So isn't that great? I want to remind you, let's get out of here. I want to remind you to check out my eatdrinktalk.net website with Steve Coombs. There's a lot of great stories there. And as always, Louisville KY, the pulse of the city, is a great place to find other news about my hometown, Louisville KY, in the springtime. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Rusty Satellite Show. I'll be back again next week with more of the most interesting people in the Ville.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. Next week, Rick will be right back here on Louisville.am with another stellar lineup of great guests. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, at Rick E. Redding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to louisvilleky.com, the pulse of the city.
Time I